This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
That's Arthi.
That's Noor.
And you're listening to The Reality Is.
It's a question of whether you feel like not outraged enough since Joe Biden won, and you feel like you need that adrenaline, and if you do need that, then you start watching Summer House. You know, and the Dallas reunion, even though it was at 10:30, you watch it.
Oh, see,
it
now I'm in for
it. It gets your BP up, it gets your heart pumping.
Yeah.
It's part of my weight loss program is to watch these shows.
I wanted to make sure I was caught up on Dallas, and so I watched it this morning, and I got to the 40-something minute mark, and I just had to pause because I felt rage rise through me in a way that did not make sense for people that I absolutely did not know in real life.
Yeah.
But we hit that moment where Cam became the racist police.
Yeah.
He became all of the Karens put together.
And I said, I know Cam doesn't like to be corrected, but words mean things.
Yeah.
Racist means something. Prejudice means something. Bigot means something. All of these things are not the same thing.
Yes.
And that's not racism.
No.
It may be a stereotype, but it's not racism. And apologies, but I just don't think that the NAACP is calling you to see what you think, Cam, or the whoever represents the AAPI community is calling you to figure out, you know, what's going on with the TikToks and how you community.
And, but you know what? There's only one word that Cam cares about, okay? And that word is bullying, okay? That's the most offensive word in Cameron Westcott's mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, like, if you attack her intelligence and her character.
Isn't that cool? I didn't know that correcting one's grammar was a character assassination. You would think that somebody who really equates grammar to their character would actually then give a shit about their grammar. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You can't make it make sense.
You can't make it make sense. All right. Well, we already started the conversation, but for our listeners, we have a guest on the podcast today, my very, very good friend, Kim Knight. I'm so excited to have you on. Kim and I became friends, like, it's been almost 3 years, actually. Yeah. I know. Well, last year didn't count as a year.
It's all the same year.
Yes, exactly. So we bonded on many, many things, but one of the main things we bonded on was reality TV. So I had to have her on the podcast to talk about what a week it's been. So today we're obviously, it's our housewife show. We know that Atlanta Reunion Part 2 aired. We're not going to talk about it this week because there was just way too much other good stuff to talk about. And, you know, the Atlanta Reunion is going to continue next week. So we'll talk about it there. So today we're going to talk about Dallas. Which we already started to get into, New York, obviously, and New Jersey. But before we get into that, Kim, you know, I gave you an assignment. The most important thing that we always ask our guests, because we all are there. Hey, we're all, nobody's perfect. Okay. We've all got pieces of shit that we've backed. And I know you and I have talked about some people on Bravo.
We've really judged each other, but loved each other through it.
Yes. Now, who is your problematic favorite?
Like, for all time, whether or not they're on the show anymore?
Yes.
Lisa Vanderpump.
Yeah?
I would step into traffic for her. I'm going to be honest.
Wow.
She has added enough fabulosity, lifestyles of the rich and famous, all that trash that they fed us immigrant children to keep us respectable, because that could be us too one day, into my life, that... it's the least I could do for her is maybe get clipped by a bus, you know?
So while your immigrant mother was throwing her slippers at you for not getting your SAT.
Where are the other 2 points?
Yeah, grades up. She was also telling you if you did well in SATs, you too can have swans outside your house.
The sky's the limit, but you don't like to study, so.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. There you go. You know, I don't know if it's just because she's been technically off TV for a little while, or that because I now really associate her with Vanderpump Rules, and she's so much less of a piece of crap compared to the people in Vanderpump Rules, that in my mind, I've forgotten that Lisa Vanderpump is problematic. Like, in my mind, I'm like, you know what? She's fine.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you that it took me a long time to admit that she probably was, you know, stirring the pot for drama. Mm-hmm. I find that she does it in a more artful way than, yes, say, a Rinna.
Yeah.
Personal opinion. It's my opinion. But yeah, I would have said if second, who's now sadly forever gone to me, is, I was a huge, I can't even get it out, Bethany Frankel fan.
It's okay. That's Arthi's girl.
Yeah.
Formerly.
She's so, such a disappointment.
Yeah.
Such a disappointment. I don't need to see how selfish people actually are and how self-centered they are. And she has shown her whole behind.
Yeah.
And there we go.
Because for Kim, there's the interest in Bravo and Housewives and all that stuff. But there's another thing that Kim really cares about, and that's the royals, okay? And specifically, Meghan Markle, and Harry.
Did you see? I have not checked all of their accounts yet, but today, the Clarence House account, which is Archie's grandfather, posted a happy birthday to Archie.
Oh, so we think that maybe there's mending of the relationships?
I think perhaps they're trying, or at least trying for whatever sake. But I checked because I'm nosy. They didn't wish Charlotte a happy birthday last week or the week before.
You think it's because she's a woman?
No, I think it's because they're a little embarrassed.
Yeah.
And Archie's going to see that his grandpa probably was a little problematic around the time of his birth, and they need to do a little bit of fixing.
What if it's all performative and that Charlotte actually got a very extravagant gift and Archie just got a tweet?
Entirely possible.
Yeah.
Entirely possible. But here's the thing that I will say. Families are incredibly messy and hard and imperfect. And so I think we see portions of that. And we know Charles is trash. I mean, I still follow the Clarence House account, so I'm trash too. But time will tell what level of involvement they have, whether they see each other, all of that. They got together for a sad reason. They broke the ice. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So it's so funny because Noor does the same kind of nosiness with Lindsay from Summer House. She follows her and you follow the Clarence House. It's just,
and then she just puts all of the pieces together.
It's just different
and goes.
Levels of stalking.
Right. Yeah. But you're following members of like the longest standing royal family. I follow a member of
the royalty from Long Island.
Same thing.
She's not even from Long Island, guys. She's from Florida. So it's like really bad.
It really is. My only issue with Summer House is they came along at a time when I was tired of not seeing diverse casts on Bravo or diverse interactions. And I realize some of that has changed and clearly they're trying with Ebony and with other stuff. But if you're a person of color who exists in worlds that are not solely Black or whatever that color is, then you look at that and you go, they don't have any Black friends?
Yeah.
They don't have any Spanish? I mean, they had the one girl, you know, whatever. Like, they don't have any, you know, like, and they would even go to spaces in the Hamptons.
Yes.
And you would just see no people of color. And I'm like, maybe I miss this when I'm the person amongst my friends that there aren't a bunch of other folks, but there's not one.
Yeah. When you go into a party and you look around and think there are no people of color in that party, you are the person they invited, so they could have a person of color at the party, so you are in.
Yeah.
I'm the diversity pick.
You are the diversity pick.
But, and God, okay, and I have to disclaim, dear friends who are listening to me now, I know that I'm not your diversity pick, and you've proven yourself to me. So it's okay.
Yes.
They truly have. It was a process, though. It was, we're in this for 11 years.
To my
years
friends,
now.
I don't mind being the diversity pick. I like you guys. I'll be there.
There you go. There you go. So obviously on the topic of diversity, boy, we had some ups and downs this week. So I wanted to ask you guys, do we want to go happy, angry, happy, or angry, happy, happy? Do we want to kick off with New York first and then really rage? Or do we want to just get the rage rage out first.
I have been waiting for a day and a half. I have a I was so mad at Noor because she did not watch it right away. She took a whole day after I watched Dallas to watch Dallas. And I was like, I need to get this out. I need to get this rage out. And I don't want to talk about it elsewhere. I want to talk to Noor about it.
Oh, right. You're like, you're my person for this. Hello.
Right.
I immediately just load up on her on iTunes or Instagram messaging, whichever is in front of me.
I started texting her and she said, I haven't watched it yet. I was like, damn it.
Right. And you're ready. Like, you're Machine Gun Kelly. Yes. You're locked and loaded. Exactly. You want to get it out.
I was like, bitch, but I need to get this out. What do I do?
Well, all right. Well, now's the time, ladies. Yeah. We're talking about the Real Housewives of Dallas reunion. Okay, how can you tell that a show is about to be canceled on Bravo? They only have two parts of a reunion. And the first part of the reunion is about 30% recap montages.
Not just that. They make it super hot and they have tinsel and foil falling.
Confetti falling
fan,
out of the air conditioning.
Confetti falling from the fan. And they don't have any lighting experts around. So.
No, none.
Who did Tiffany's makeup? She just looks really, like, it's just odd.
It looked caked on. It looked a little too caked on. I think it was a little
too
much.
Rather, like, dark. And her makeup was flawless for the whole season. And when you, the going back and forth of it is just, I was like, oh.
Yeah. Everybody looked bad.
Yeah, everybody looked bad. Cam looked, like, overly contoured. Somebody said online that she looked like somebody from Whoville. She had this little
she did
tip kind of,
but I think the same thing for there was like a very heavy dark contour on Tiffany, like underneath her, like her cheeks were brown.
They were. Deandra looks like she's like 87% filler at this point in her face. I'm like, lady.
Dee looked younger in her on her phone when Deandra was getting ready and they showed Dee. Dee looked younger than Deandra at that point.
Okay.
Deandra looks like she's mid blowing a raspberry. You know, that's what her face looks like. But fashions and bad makeup aside, this reunion was a fucking disaster. And the reason you can go and actually check out our Instagram stories right now. I've been raging about it for the last 24 hours. Yeah. Bravo clearly has a racism problem, and we know that. And we already started watching Dallas sort of hesitant, knowing that they're allowing Brandy back on. They're going to have Tiffany have to deal with these people. We watched Tiffany get hazed in a way that is extremely microaggressive, in a way that made us all very, very uncomfortable. But the thing that upset me the most watching this reunion was you had a person on the cast who has ruined every single trip that they've been on this season. You only talk to her for about 6 minutes about the shit that she did. The rest of the reunion was spent talking about Tiffany, her TikToks, her tweets, her food. And it blew my mind that Andy did not put fire to Carrie at all. And even when talking about Carrie, it was like, Carrie did terrible things, but the person who's actually in the wrong is Deandra, because Deandra made a poster about bullying. Like, are you kidding me?
When I first started watching it, I was mad at Kim. And then as my rage permeated through my body, I was madder at Andy.
Yes.
Because, like you said, the focus was completely on the off-camera Instagram and TikTok stuff that was happening between Tiffany and Cam, but not about the on-camera stuff that the others had done bad.
Yep.
And he kept their feud going by asking Tiffany all kinds of borderline uncomfortable, wrong racist questions, while he did not hold anybody else accountable for everything that they had actual racist stuff that they had done on camera. He did not even hold them accountable. So I felt like towards the end, I was mad. I was furious at Andy Cohen. It's much more than I was at stupid Faw Elwoods.
Yeah.
Bravo has a problem. So if we look at just Dallas, they're picking on Tiffany partially because Tiffany is the only reason why they have a real storyline beyond dysfunction.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I think because they are inelegant and unequipped to deal with issues of race and culture in any substantive way, they fall back mm-hmm. on her, and they fall back on this storyline around her because at least it's something to talk about, right?
Yeah.
So I think you've seen this, but I think there's a big problem. We saw it with Potomac too, right?
Right, right.
There was this big moment to talk around respectability politics responsibly. And instead it became a whole conversation about, oh my God, do you think the fight was this and that and the other? And no one spoke about the nuance of whether or not respectability politics even made sense in the modern era. Yeah. They don't have the reach.
It's, no, yeah, they don't.
It's almost like, just like they had, they brought on, what's her name from E? They brought her on to talk about Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And they had a whole session on Black Lives Matter.
Oh, all of those special
the race in America, yeah. Right. After school specials. Yeah.
Educational stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I almost feel like the producers and the cast and everybody needs to go through some special racial sensitivity training of some sort before Bravo can do any more of these kinds of shows. This is like, for me, it was a crisis moment for Bravo, because when I saw that happening, I was like, are you really in this day and age going to sit there and ask Tiffany and tell her she was being mean to Cam on some stupid tweet or really, Instagram?
Yeah, but when you don't really understand the problem.
Yeah, they don't understand it. And it's like, I don't know how, other than walking away from the shows and walking away from the channel and the network, I don't know how else we can make Bravo accountable if they won't. They just, it's almost like they plain refuse to understand. It's almost to the point where right now you are refusing to acknowledge and understand.
So this was where I hit this morning. As yeah. I watched this reunion, I thought, you are more concerned about the appearance of fairness in a completely not substantive way. Like, you just want to look like you're checking all these boxes and using all these words.
They are way more concerned with the appearances around equity and inclusion than understanding what equity and inclusion would actually mean. Mm-hmm. And so it leads to these incredibly awkward and at best and infuriating at worst instances for them during reunions and in general. So we saw it in Potomac. Mm-hmm. You know, we were more concerned about talking about this thing that they didn't have the depth for. Mm-hmm. And no one brought the perspective of, is respectability politics something that we really think is even appropriate to converse on? Like, is that necessary? Like, that's one lens, but they don't have the reach for that. So they're not going to do that. So instead, we police all of this stuff and it becomes a moment of shame when someone actually put hands on someone and we couldn't even focus on the fact that, you know, like a physical action had happened that was not okay.
Yeah.
And now you have this situation where you cannot even have a conversation about Tiffany's cultural lens because anything that has to do with something that's different is racial. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if I'm uncomfortable now as a non-POC, I call it racist. Mm-hmm. I literally pulled up my phone and was like, okay, maybe I don't remember what racist and bigot and prejudice. I mean, I really did. Maybe I forgot what these words mean, because if I even use a racial trope as a person in that group, that there's nuance. There's no nuance with Bravo. It's flat.
Yeah. Every race is prejudiced against some other race, right? Every individual has prejudices, but not every individual and every race is racist. There's a whole big difference between the two. I can admit it. I know I have been prejudiced against people, certain people, certain groups of people, maybe, but I haven't been racist because I never had the power to be racist and discriminate against them.
And there's the key.
I may have a viewpoint that this is what happened, but I haven't used that as a way of putting them down or keeping them out of opportunity or doing any of that, because I never had the power to do so.
Yeah.
There were also people in one of the Facebook groups that was getting confused between the idea of a person of color versus minority. And they were like, aren't Asians the most people on earth? How can they be minorities? That it just was like, what kind of mind thinks about like that? Like, how do you not realize what the difference is?
Because we're having a conversation where we sit.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And this where, is we, where sit, we sit, nobody
but also
this-
but also yeah. When has racism been deterred by the sheer number of persons of color? The whole idea of colonialism and the fact that a small island of England ruled over 3/4 of this planet filled with people of color. That in itself is an example that sheer number doesn't mean anything. It's power that means
something.
And
it's how you classify those people. So if those people are commoditized and they don't have the power, then their mm-hmm. number doesn't matter other than that they've become an asset for other people.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So if you look at this country, we're a very rich nation. Mm-hmm. We're a very rich nation because we traded on people and we had massive assets. Those assets mm-hmm. were people of color who mm-hmm. were enslaved and brought over to this country. It made us very rich.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you look at the numbers, I had this funny instance 2 years ago, or maybe 3 years ago now. I went to Colonial Williamsburg and a woman in character who was a Black woman walked up to me and she said, "Never forget there are more of us than there are of them." And we forget. Oh man, it was a lightning moment for me.
I felt lightning just now.
We both looked at each other and smiled and nodded.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It does not matter. That's literally what racism means, is that it does not matter how many of you are there. You could be a majority in sheer numbers and still experience racism, because it matters who is in power and how they're wielding that power over you based on color, based on gender, based on sexuality, based on any of those. That discrimination is what matters.
And my frustration is, I am tired.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. These are conversations we've been having for years, mm-hmm. but with perhaps less distraction over the last year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there is still very little nuance. There is still no one to say, "Cam, when you say something's racist, that's not what that word means."
Mm-hmm. So I was like, why did it have to be Tiffany asking the question of Cam?
Yep.
Wait, how am I being racist against my own race?
Why the hell didn't Andy Cohen step in? You exactly. are their boss. You are their boss. This is your moment to say, "Whoa, Cameron, that is not okay. Yeah. We don't say that."
Yeah.
But what all Andy sees are ratings and memes mm-hmm. and GIFs and tweets mm-hmm. and dollar mm-hmm. bills.
But yeah, he did step in. When it was about a mean tweet. Oh, that was mean though, Tiffany. Wasn't that mean? That was mean.
I mean, he said it was mean and he was laughing about it. It was all just so disjointed, the whole thing. You guys, by the way, made excellent points. I think what I always like to say is, for some reason, white people, they shut down when you say the word racism. So I go ahead and I use the word white supremacy, because at the core, this is what it's all rooted in. Cam is a wealthy white woman who gets to sit there and be smug and dictate whether or not she thinks Tiffany talking about her own culture is, forget racist, even if it's funny. She doesn't think it's funny. She finds it disturbing. Mm-hmm. She wants to figure out what happened when she was growing up because she thinks it's so disturbing.
Like you really care.
Like you really care. Mm-hmm. You know, she thinks that Tiffany's food is not good enough. She thinks that Tiffany's parties are not good enough. She thinks Tiffany's got too many toilets and she talks about them. Cam is the person who enjoys being at the top of the pyramid. Mm-hmm. And anybody who comes in and threatens that is the enemy. And that in itself is a supremacist way of thinking. You mm-hmm. believe that you are supreme and everybody else below you is not good enough. That's what I always like to drill it down to. You get too upset when I say the word racist. Think about the fact that Cam thinks that she's better than everyone. Usually the response to that is, well, Tiffany corrected Cam and, you know, she's the one that's always being a grammar police and blah, 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 blah. Cameron Westcott has been on TV for 4 seasons and her entire shtick is that she's a dumb blonde. She's had her husband and her children make fun of her every mm-hmm. single season. Even the game that they referenced on that they were playing on Watch What Happens Live, which led to Tiffany tweeting that thing about a dictionary a day. Mm-hmm. That was a game made for Watch What Happens Live to make fun of Cam and her intelligence. She laughed about it with Cheyenne Jackson. She laughed about it with Andy Cohen. But she's not going to laugh about it when Tiffany does it. Why? Because Tiffany's not a white woman.
Right. So Tiffany doesn't get to criticize her.
Tiffany doesn't get to criticize her. Because when Tiffany does it, Cameron, who is not just a white supremacist, but obviously a fragile white supremacist, mm-hmm. is feeling feelings about her supremacy being questioned by a minority. And that's where she draws the line. And she says, no, thank you. I'm not laughing at that. I think that's, she said it was evil. I was like, yeah. This bitch spent the entire season complaining about her. The worst thing in her life was that she had to move from a multi-million-dollar home to another multi-million-dollar home. And she's sitting here and saying it was mean and evil. Like, you have not been through life enough to sit here and talk about what is mean and evil. It was boiling my blood. And then to sit, to watch Andy Cohen sit there, read the tweets, look at the packet of papers and say, well, that was kind of mean, but also laugh about it. Dude, it's shade. It's Twitter shade. Everybody does Twitter shade now. Right. That is the thing that we do on Housewives. All of them.
And the sad part about it is that Tiffany never gets to, like, she's still, I feel that even now, she's just trying to join in. Mm-hmm. So everybody else gets to do in these things, right? They get to make fun of Cam being a little ditzy. They get to do all of these things. And yes, there are times when she doesn't do it quite well and it doesn't land well. The party rules that time she had people over were absurd.
Yes.
But she's trying to figure out her way in this group and she's new. And there's no room for her to figure that out.
Yeah.
Instead, intent and motive get ascribed and nobody asks her what she means.
Yeah, exactly. So it's okay for, just going back to what you were talking about with the whole game, it was okay for Cam to be made fun of on national TV by her white boss and her white other guest that was there and laughing and everything, but wasn't okay for her to be the same kind of fun by an Asian woman.
Tiffany cannot access that. No.
Yeah,
no.
She cannot, because how dare she?
Now, all of this, when they brought it up, Cam had this air of smugness, and I know that's like her brand, but it was extra smug. You know, Andy said, well, the chicken feet thing got so intense that production had to get involved. And Cam looks at Tiffany and she says, yeah, it was really bad. It got really out of control. And that smugness tells me that production got involved, not in a way where Cam was told that she needs to check herself. No, no, production got in a way where Tiffany was told, you need to sit down and you can't do this kind of stuff because it's mean and it's problematic. And now Jen Davis, the nonsense friend of, went on Twitter and said, oh, Tiffany, Dr. Mean got fined for saying, let the white-splaining begin. Which, by the way, that's what's happening on Dallas. They are white-splaining Tiffany's culture. Call it what it is. But she said that Tiffany was fined $5,000 by production. Since then, I've had people reach out to me and say that they know people and they asked around and they said that they were not fined $5,000. Okay, whether or not they were fined, Tiffany being told that she cannot say these things, when you allow somebody like Brandi Redmond to be allowed back on TV where her sob story and her struggle gets to have a space, that's bullshit. Yeah. That's where I go, set this entire thing on fire, evacuate the building, obviously get Tiffany and Deandra out, but set this whole thing on fire. Like, I'm done with it. I am going to watch part two, but I am hurting watching part two. And I am hurting from, as a viewer, I cannot imagine how difficult this is for Tiffany. Yeah. And Tiffany, there's an article today that came out and she was interviewed, and I can't remember the name of the publication, but I posted it on Twitter. But she talks about her life as an immigrant child coming from China and literally having nothing. And now being part of this show that celebrates extravagance and, you know, money and all this kind of stuff. And she says that when she was joining the show, because she had been asked for a couple of years, when she was joining the show, COVID hadn't happened and Black Lives Matter hadn't happened. Or Black Lives Matter been happening, but, you know, it hadn't happened to the scale. The movement didn't get to everybody's brains the way it did this year, but those things hadn't happened yet. So she said that she was planning to go into it being like, frivolous parties and all this kind of stuff. And she wasn't planning on it turning into what it was. And we're now living in a very different time. But even then, you know, she says that she never fit into any place before. And like you said, she's finding her space with these people. She talks about in the article how she was tormented as a kid. She would go to school and she would be spat on and she would be hit and she would be made fun of because of who she was. She was a 6-year-old who didn't speak English. And she looked differently than the other kids. When I was reading that, I was like, I can't imagine the amount of trauma that she had to deal with being treated essentially the same way by grown women.
And imagine going through this now and putting yourself at risk again.
Yeah.
So yeah. I was very struck by the comment that she made right at the start that mm-hmm. she doesn't know how this affects her professionally. Yeah. And all I wanted to do was say, please just give her Married to Medicine Dallas and figure it out, because yeah. I think that works better in terms of a franchise that perhaps doesn't affect. And, you know, Andy says, well, have you thought about this and that and the other? And I guess if Tiffany wants to figure out something that, you know, she sells that Bravo gets a cut of, that's great. But if she wants to practice medicine, hospitals are very conservative, even in the wild, mm-hmm. wild west of Texas. Mm-hmm. Imagine doing all of this and then still having people accuse you of awful things. And then I was so offended when Cam said, you know, you don't know how many people were calling me girl and asking me why you were being, who calls Cameron Westcott to talk about
yeah.
about a person of color being racist and ignores your culture is my costume.
Yeah.
Yes.
I need you to sit down and stop talking. Yes. And the fact that Andy can pick and choose what portions, to your point, of social media he wants to play in. Oh, so that was a mean tweet. But no one's going to talk about your culture is my costume.
Yes.
And the brother-in-law.
That
and
just happened.
Yes.
That just happened yes. in front of him. She said the words that stereotyping is racism.
He didn't step in then. So why would he step in
that? We're not talking about your family. You're not saying that that's wrong. No. And we're not talking about the fact that Carrie found it hilarious. No.
Yes.
Because we want to show that we're being fair to everyone by policing the people of color. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm done with you.
And we're not talking about the fact that, okay, fine, your intern or your assistant tweeted out or posted that picture of Sparkle dog food and that totally insensitive caption. Oh, but we're not going to talk about the fact that Brandy fucking Redmond responded to that picture and said, haha, you're so funny, girl. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we're not going to talk about that. No, but we are going to cut to Brandy every single time this comes up so we can see her smug face smiling and nodding along with Cam.
Because she was a jerk, but she's not in the hot seat.
Yeah.
The entire reunion was an assault on my sensibilities as a minority. It was an entire, perfect. The whole damn thing was an assault. Every one of them. The fact that they all sat quietly. I wanted Deandra to speak up. I really wish Deandra would speak up. I'm like, I know, Deandra, that you're on Tiffany's side and you're there for moral support and all of that, but you do not speak up, Deandra.
So, Artie, this is the other problem that I realized later today that I had, which is there's this thing that folks know things are wrong, but they don't know what their place is, so they say nothing.
Yeah.
I was talking to a girlfriend of mine and saying, I've been in that space in our group of friends, and this is a group of friends where I'm the only, well, not the only, but I'm one of two Black people, brown people, any people of color in this group. And I have had conversations where I've just, you know, I'm going to say it how it is. And it's crickets. Yeah. And I just kind of get used to it. And it is what it is. And I'm not going to edit myself and not be me. And I know people take things in and sometimes they don't know what to say.
Yeah.
But she's already said, it's hard for me. I find that this stuff, we make it much more complicated. And I feel like sometimes it's like, hey, just don't be a selfish jerk.
Yep.
All she has to say is, I feel uncomfortable, Cam. That was not cool. Mm-hmm. Use simple words.
Yeah. Stephanie Holman, nice and quiet, doesn't want to ruffle any feathers, right? It's like, they don't want to speak up and they're making the person of color do the emotional labor of all of this bullshit. And I know Deandra has a lot to say about the way that Carrie was treating her. And when she was talking about that, guess who defended her? The only person who did was Tiffany. And I hope that next episode they show some of that. Deandra did send us a DM. Okay. She said that she is very supportive of Tiffany. But I do hope that Deandra does speak up, because I think that was the other thing that was making me upset. It's crickets when the one person of color is being attacked. And what happens is, guess what, white people? When you look like the aggressor, welcome to our world. When you look like the aggressor, we're going to bundle you with the aggressor. That's what we're going to do, because that's how you treat us.
They all see the same right now. Everybody seems the same.
Yeah. I'll tell you that as South Asians, we oftentimes are in that middle spot, right? Even in our workspaces, there's a person of color, like a Black person or a Hispanic person in our workplace, and there are white folks in our workplace. And sometimes you're in a meeting and you can see the bullying happening.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes South Asians will keep quiet because it's not their fight. And I had to make myself get involved because it would upset me, but I didn't know what to say and I wouldn't say it. So that was something that I had to work on personally to speak up, because at the very least, somebody told me, if I spoke up, I give the person of color a few seconds to process and think and not have to respond right away because I deflect.
And you don't feel alone.
Even that those few seconds helps, because when these kinds of microaggressions or sometimes overt, real actual aggressions happen in a workplace scenario, it happens so out of the blue when you're not quite expecting it. All of a sudden somebody says something and you find it like deep inside it's offensive. It takes all your strength and energy to respond to it in a respectable way instead of flipping the table like Teresa would do. You cannot go down to that level because you are supposed to react politely, but they are the aggressors, but you are being judged on your reaction. So you have to react cautiously. And it takes, if only if allies would just speak up, it just gives the person of color a few seconds to collect their thoughts, take a deep
breath.
And
you feel like maybe there's always this thing that goes on in your head, right? That goes, am I reading this correctly?
Correct.
And I think there's sort of this thought around this whole thing that like we really have a physical race card and it weighs down on our back pocket and we can't wait to throw it down, right? Yeah. And you actually get taught. And, you know, I'm sort of in this weird intersectional point where my family is West Indian. So I was raised with their model minority sensibilities, but also because I was born in this country, I see more of the American Black experience. And so it's really interesting because they had all of that talk that happened to them, which is, was very much like, well, you're not like the other Black people. And they got sucked into that whole thing and got, you know, I had that whole trope. And so I grew up hearing bunches of stuff about Black Americans that I didn't, you know, that I kind of was like, as I got older, I'm like, I think that this, there are more problems here than you guys think. And I don't know that I think that this is a bunch of lazy people who haven't taken advantage of the resources that you guys are going to just, you know, do now. I like, this feels more complicated, but you really get winded. I mean, and I've experienced it. And then there are no optics ever, even where me punching back doesn't make me look super aggressive, even when I'm just trying to do it to protect myself. I'm very aware of it. I've experienced it in a professional capacity. And you have to make yourself very, very small in order to not look like a threat. And nobody thinks about the damage that that does.
The damage it does to women, especially women of color, that they constantly have to make themselves small in order to let those who want to be the supreme stand in their place and not be corrected. And it's a, it tears away at your soul. And I am watching Tiffany go through that. And I've, even on social media, she's been fairly silent about her own feelings on it. She's been like reposting other people's stuff. But I can imagine this took an emotional toll on her because this wasn't what she was preparing to go into the show about. They've been trying to get her on because she is married to this, into this uber rich family. She is a genius prodigy child doctor. And they were supposed to be celebrating that. And she came into it and now she was now being held responsible and doing the emotional labor of making these white people like her. Like I said, I will watch part two. I'm not going to be happy about it. And you know, you brought up Married to Medicine, and I think it's interesting because Married to Medicine is the one place where they do everything. I mean, it's the best show on TV. They do everything. They talk about race. They have petty fights. They talk about real life stuff and it just flows. And their reunions are really good. But you know why their reunions are good? Is because they all communicate with each other.
Well, they're authentic.
They're authentic and they say what's on their mind. They actually say what's on their mind. And there's never a moment when they're saying these things where they don't have that moment that you just described, Kim, where you're sitting there and you're waiting to see if you're the only person that heard what everybody else heard. It's like you don't have that because they're amongst peers. And so they're able to be open and honest about how they actually feel and how words are impacting them. But when you're the only person that looks like you, and somebody says something crazy, you kind of have to be like, oh, well, nobody else in the room is going to understand because nobody has my experience. And we talk about allyship. We've been talking about it for the last year. It's not about these black squares, y'all. Like, it's not about you share shared a link to, you know, a fundraiser. This is what we mean. You need to speak up.
It's about the hard stuff.
Yeah. That's the hard work. Those are the uncomfortable conversations you need to have. Those are the people that need to speak up.
It's the conversation you and I had a couple weeks ago where I posted this lady that I found, you know, I finally broke down and got the TikTok. And because I come from a different perspective, I missed something that was offensive.
Yeah.
And you could sit down here and talk all day long about whether it really is or whether it really isn't and what this is and what this isn't and what she meant and what she didn't. But my friend said, I find this deeply offensive and here's why. And I hadn't considered it from that perspective. And I said, oh, I think all South Asian people are cool, but I'm Caribbean. So I'm bred to believe that because that's the power structure in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So I don't see the American thing where it's more of a mocking thing.
Yeah.
And I just think everything brown is beautiful because I'm Jamaican. And so I missed all of the stuff. And she said, oh, no, here's the problem. And here's why. And I said, oh. And so then I asked a bunch of nerdy questions and she let me because, again, we were in a safe space where, look, she knows I'm not a jerk and I don't want to hurt her. And I know she's not a jerk and she wants to correct me and let me know how she feels. And because we're really friends, then I go, oh, man. And guess what? I unfollowed and I don't share because I realized that this is problematic. Do I need it? Does she pay my bills? No. I can move past this. And it's like, but so few people are willing to see past, like, I could have been like, oh my God, I didn't mean it like that. And she's funny. And, you know, she's South Asian too. So obviously this must be okay for her. And I could have picked a fight and been like, you know, I'm not like that. I didn't. I just listened. And then I said, okay, my friend says this hurts. I don't have to be a jerk to my friend.
And we've all screwed up. Like there's been times when I've said stuff. I know I have. God, I recently had to clean up my Facebook because if you go back to the person I was in college, no, thank you, ma'am. I am canceled at age 19. And so there's been times when we've all said stuff that was a problem and it's constantly learning and growing, right? You have to just go, okay, in the last year, I learned that these are things that I can't say or things I can't do because the people who actually own this piece of entertainment or language or music or whatever it is, those people are saying it's not cool for me to do that. The least I can do is listen and stop using it. It's not impacting me in any way. It's not my, you know, I'm not losing the roof over my head over this. It's just... It's mind-boggling to me. It's not mind-boggling to me. It makes sense to me that people who are so used to benefiting in a world where they are superior would have such a defensive reaction to anybody coming to correct them. Guys, it goes back to white supremacy, okay? That's what it is.
It all does. But you know what? Sonia Morgan has rainbow fish. And as long as she has rainbow fish... the world is going to be better. And if we all, if more people had rainbow fish, then we could let, we could silently signal to the blacks that we're down with them. Wink, wink.
That's a great segue to New York.
That's a good segue into New York. Because I could rage on Dallas forever, but that was like, could Sonia be more transparent?
God bless her heart. It is amazing that we can have so much anger at this and yet Sonia does this thing that is so clunky and you go, oh, Sonia.
So here's the difference,
Go ahead.
So it's the difference. Sonia is doing something problematic too, but she is doing it with the intention of making Ebony feel welcome.
That's
her intention. It's clunky, it's misguided, it's wrong, but the intention behind it is to make Ebony feel welcome. It could easily have been a microaggression. You can feel the intention behind it.
Yeah.
Ebony is like, yeah, I'm glad there is diversity in the,
it's just
in
so funny.
Koi pond.
Me up, and she said it like with so much pride. It cracked me up because it was almost like somewhere in Sonia's mind, Sonia's crazy mind, she's like, you know, I'm glad they had Ebony join the cast, but you know, the Real Housewives of New York has always been diverse. Look at my fish. Like in her mind, the diversity quota been met because No, because of her fish.
She was like, this fish has half, it only has one fin. That's a disability fish. This one, this one is definitely gay. And this one just changed gender. So that's a trans.
Thanks for catching fish. Up. Thanks for catching up. We've been here. We've been here.
She's like, okay, I got all kinds of fish.
You know, I was going into the Real Housewives of New York season now, obviously, and I think we've all kind of privately and to each other talked about this, about the fear of having Ebony on. Rae Sani was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and she brought up the fact that as a New Yorker, as people who live in the Northeast, there is a type of New York racism that is not that we're going to see in New York on Real Housewives of New York that's going to make us question some of our people that we have on here. Like, we know Ramona is a monster, but I think the part of like Luann that we're going to see, obviously they showed a preview to it next episode, those parts of Luann, or even what Sonia brought up with the fish, right? Like those things and how they will receive any reaction to those things. The whole thing goes down to, if Sonia said that thing, Ebony laughed about it because she knew the intention behind Sonia's words. Luann is a known uppity monster. Like that's Luann's brand, as she looks down on people. So I'm going to have to wait to see how Luann reacts to a Black woman coming to correct her. And that's where I think I worry, because it's going to make me cringe in a way that will make it unenjoyable.
It's my summer house problem.
Yeah.
How do these people, New York of all places, how do they not have substantive relationships with people of color so they're not uncomfortable at this point? I don't think that there are a ton of uber wealthy Black people in New York, but there are quite a few. There are enough. And you don't have one significant enough relationship so that this is not awkward.
Mm-hmm. And I keep thinking, if that fish comment had been made by Ramona or Luann, how would we feel about it?
Oh, we would have trashed her.
It's a good point, because the thing is with Sonia is too lost in her own mind to really have ill intent with something. You know, she's flighty and spacey in a way that doesn't come with any level of smugness. Early season Sonia was definitely smug, and she thought her shit didn't stink. But Sonia has been through some dark times on this show, and she continues to have many dark times. I believe this season is going to be another one. She's already drunk episode 2. So like, we're talking about Sonia Morgan, who knows that she's a bit of a hot mess. So I don't think that she has necessarily the leg to stand on to really be smug to anybody at this point. The thing with Ramona and Luann is getting better also. Luann got better after she, got off of her cabaret train and had some reality hit her. Mm-hmm. It obviously didn't happen right away because Bethany had to scream in her face, but Luann is getting there where she is a little bit more self-aware about her own problems. The issue with Ramona is she apologizes, but in Ramona's mind, she's never wrong. And that's cute when it's something like parties or clothes or whatever. It's not cute when it's race.
Or when you're digging into Leah's mental health diagnosis and discussing that. Or when you get into sort of these issues of race. I mean, again, Ramona had a party. It was her 78th birthday party with 78 of her best friends. And not a single one of them had even a deep tan. None of them even looked like Dolores.
They all looked like her. They looked like her. It was like a whole bunch of Ramonas. But also, like, Sonia, even at her worst, Sonia has always been more self-aware than any of the others have been.
She's as self-aware as anyone who lives in Grey Gardens is ever going to be.
Yeah, exactly. she is. And she says it herself. I ended up back at my townhouse because my Century 21 thing went through, right? That they filed for bankruptcy. She finally had a success that she was so happy. Can you imagine being Sonia, though? Can you imagine the struggle that she has been through, that poor woman? She finally gets a success, and then the whole company goes bankrupt.
But here's the beauty and the problem of Sonia Morgan. This is all very true. Sonia is also the person who is telling an intern who is simultaneously working on her master's that she needs to learn how to run a bubble bath for someone.
Okay.
And okay. I I judge myself for the fact that instead of being offended, I am drawn further in. You know, I'm kind of like, did you just tell this chick and said, I mean, I know you're working on your master's, but you need to know how to put bubble bath in water. No, no, you don't.
Right. No, so you don't. Funny. There's some, she's giving some so much value add to that master's when you teach her some household skills. I know a lot of people don't like Sonia, and there are quite a few people who hate her. There really? Are people who hate her, people who do not like Sonia. Yes. I just love her because she's such a tragic, tragic figure. I would give her, if I met her, I would give her a dollar. I would help her out.
So here's the thing about Sonia. This is why Sonia is lovable, is because Sonia doesn't wield any power.
Right.
And that's why Sonia and her nonsense and her faux pas and all of her stuff is still enjoyable to watch, because she is not actually going to hurt a person.
It's not racism. It's just prejudice.
Yeah, right. Like she's not gonna hurt anybody with the shit that she does. She's gonna hurt herself before she hurts anybody else. You know what I mean? That's who Sonia is. But what did you guys think about Ebony's first episode?
I think she did well. I think she stepped in and said, I'm just gonna own this. And I think that's great. I appreciate that all of the freshman women in 2020 and 2021 understand what they're coming into to some extent when they come into Housewives. And Housewives itself has evolved into an entirely different animal than what I watched was at 13, 14 years ago now when we went behind the gates with OC. It is not awkward. It is not clunky. They come in and they give you something.
Yeah.
I had to struggle with my own moment of when she spoke about her credit issues and all of that kind of stuff, my own issues with respectability, politics, and oh my goodness, do we have to tell the white people that you had credit problems right at the start? But that's a personal issue, right? You know, and I caught myself and I thought, all of these women have had issues at one time or another. Some of them have had money issues. This is not a big deal. Honestly, the perfect housewife right now is one where, gosh, where does your money really come from, apparently?
Yeah.
And Ebony's being transparent and authentic. And I think that makes for the best kind of housewife.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, so at first I was like, oh. And then I was like, oh, you know what? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's owning her truth, and she's owning it before somebody else throws it in her face.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's, I think, is a smart move. And if she's a smart, funny housewife, she's going to be awesome to watch.
Yeah. I mean, she came in with some very intentional things on camera and things that I think if it was done poorly would have come off like she was a tryhard, but she didn't.
Yeah.
She was she's coming off very authentic. And I think she just knows how to present herself in a very polished way where she's clearly going to keep some things to herself. She's going to keep some cards close to her chest, but she's very willing to let you into some of the boundaries that she's placed. Mm-hmm. Like, they're boundaries that are close enough where you think that you're getting everything, but you're not. And it seems like, I would think that for women of color, that's not necessarily a new skill, especially a woman of color who wants to be in the media. That's not a new skill. You have to be able to do that in order to get ahead in specifically in that industry.
And people very much want to feel like they have a piece of you, or that you're socializing with them, or all of those other things in order for you to advance. Mm-hmm. And yet you have to be very careful, and you kind of toe this line. It's really interesting. I will say New York is the best edited of all of the housewife shows. Like, they know what they're going to do. Like, they're already telling, okay, so we're doing a little establishing. We know that this wasn't a fast out the gate, but we're going to give you these hints. I loved the way they ended the episode. I know we're hopping all around, but them going into this whole like, oh, it seems nice now, but it's not going to be nice for long. And I was like, that was crazy.
Yes. That
also,
was good.
You know, we spoke about this allyship and the awkwardness of having conversations that are difficult in white circles. That happened when they were back in that room. And so she started to talk about Sag Harbor, and they did not know what to do with that puppy. They were like, oh, we're going to talk about the race thing on
and
the
it
first
wasn't, And it thing. Wasn't even a serious conversation. So She did not. So she met with Leah in Central Park and she made her statement with her t-shirt and
yes, her sweatshirt.
She did not bring up the subject, but she made a big statement. But when she was talking about a very lighthearted conversation about Sag Harbor, you could see them tensing up. That you were like, oh my God, is she going to start talking about that now? And then is this going to lead into Black Lives Matter? And do I have to have an opinion? And do I have to come off as...
Girl, do I have to go to a protest with you?
Oh, yeah. Like, what do I do? Tell you,
Lou tried.
Yeah.
Lou tried. She tried in that I'm a hostess, so I have to address this and this is my training kind of way. And I said, I'm going to give you, half. We'll see where you go, but I'm going to give you something for that.
Yeah.
Sonia tried in the way that's, oh, really? I had no idea. And
kind of
bounced back to Saturn. Yeah. Ramona was not going to say, word.
But Ramona went in hard and she's like, I think we have a connection. Ramona was like, I know everybody thinks I'm going to be a racist.
Yes.
I'm going to go the exact opposite way and make her my best friend. And that's what she went in. I'm like, I'm going to make Ebony my friend. And everybody know that I'm not a racist. So I'm going to do that.
And the producers go, this won't last. It's okay. What you expect is coming. Yeah. Fire is on the way.
Yeah, right. I think Ramona's strategy is definitely like, if I become friends with her first, then anything that I do that's problematic will be treated with kid gloves rather than treated like I'm some sort of a jerk monster. Right. You know, I loved seeing Ebony, but I think one of the things that was so astonishing to me was watching Real Housewives of New York and having an entire scene where there's two Black women on the screen and nobody else. Mm-hmm. The fact that Real Housewives of New York at this point now in 2021 is having that moment is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
The fact that is revolutionary
is crazy.
It's crazy.
When's the last time we've even seen, the African intern of Sonia's?
Probably. Pickles. And the guy that Dorinda tried to give her jacket to or something, or asked for water in a restaurant, who was not working at the restaurant. She just assumed he was a waiter.
R.I.P. Dorinda. Pour one out for her. I'm not going to miss her at all.
So let's talk about the one problematic person that was in this episode was Leah and her newest
fetish.
Maybe it's her hobby converting to Judaism.
Let me tell you, somebody, you know, likening yourself to Madonna, who has for the last few decades been appropriating a new culture every 5 years or so, is not great, Leah McSweeney. Like, that's not something you should be aspiring to. Mm-hmm. But Leah,
I don't care for
you know.
Leah.
No,
Leah I don't had a, care for Leah.
Okay, I wanted to ask you because I felt some type of way about it, but I wasn't sure if it was, you know, what we're talking about. I don't know if it was just me. I don't know if I was reaching, but I had a reaction to it. Leah shows up, new face, new apartment, now new religion. But she said when she introduced Ebony into the mix, she used the term Black girl magic.
Yes.
Oh, the whole that conversation in the car when they were going, where she was trying to stir things up ahead so she wouldn't have to stir things up when she was there and be obvious.
Yes.
I was like, oh, you.
Yeah.
But I don't like Leah. She did an interview with Danny Pellegrino a year or two ago, and I thought, oh, so this is who you are. I'm okay.
Yeah.
God bless. Thoughts and prayers. I wish you well. Bless your heart. All the things.
I'm hoping that Leah being next to an actual person of color will show how ass backwards Leah is. Because Leah looks great in front of Ramona, Luann, Dorinda, and Sonia. She looks like she is, you know, the millennial woke voice of reason. But I'm hoping that being next to Ebony will prove that she's not. But what I think is actually going to happen, what my fear is and what I believe is going to happen, is that she is going to cuddle up with Ebony to try to get more clout as somebody who is more woke. And it'll further just hide the fact that she's just going to, you know, she's going to ride her coattails into looking like she's a woke person and looking like she's understanding. When Leah McSweeney, you know, wrote for The Federalist, like, she's an extremely problematic person.
That whole conversation about why she didn't vote and how that is rooted in privilege.
Yeah. Yes.
That she has never acknowledged.
Ugh. Yes.
But we can make fun of Tinsley, who actually did vote.
Yeah. I don't like Leah. I don't like seeing her on my screen. This thing about, oh, I'm converting to Judaism and I know nothing about it. I'm Muslim, but I grew up in North Jersey. My kids go to mm-hmm. Jewish school, actually. Basically, I grew up around a lot of Jewish culture. And mm-hmm. I take Judaism quite seriously because it is very close to Islam. And mm-hmm. I take anybody talking about converting like it's no big deal. I mean, she keeps talking about how it's a process, but like her not knowing that if you go to an Orthodox rabbi, you're going to have to be more modest.
And then saying, well, I like a challenge. Like, what's yeah. challenge, girl? The yeah. challenge is conformity.
Yes. Yeah.
I was born and raised in Crown Heights. The challenge yeah. is conformity.
Yes.
There's no extra lane for you, but she doesn't see that. I mean, she was able to, you know, profit off of Urban Wear and call mm-hmm. it her own thing mm-hmm. and, you know, make it her. She believes that she's going to make Judaism her own too and find her own path. Yeah, it's called Reformer. And yeah. you do that one or any of these other versions or, yeah. or groups, it is not Orthodox.
Yes. Yeah. And she's like, I'm going to do Orthodox because I'm doing it the right way or the real way or something like that.
Which is also so problematic because yeah. now you're not even Jewish yet. And now you're already saying that there's an entire type of Jewish people that aren't actual mm-hmm. real Jews. It was right. weird. Yeah. It was really messy. She also, of course, famously is making money off of Lil' Kim's face on t-shirts. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a white woman and you sell a black woman's mugshot on your t-shirts and you don't see how problematic that is. It blows my mind.
Because it's not a problem.
Yeah, in her mind, it's not a problem. Yeah, exactly. Do you think that Luann is going to stay sober this season?
She has allergies, okay? She'll take some Flonase and start drinking again.
For how much of the season? I think we have 60% sober chance.
Let's take bets. Which episode do you think she's going to drink? Second, third, fourth. Let's come up with the number.
I think episode 4.
Oh, yeah. I think so. I don't know how many episodes it's going to be in the season, but I'm going to say at some point around the mid-season trailer, Lou is going to start drinking more alcohol, as she says.
I would agree. It is going to happen ahead of the midseason.
I think it's going to be 3, 4, or 5. It's only going to depend on how they edit that particular whatever they're doing. Yeah. Because they can put it in 3, 4, or 5. But it'll be one event that spans 3, 4, and 5. Season, episodes 3, 4, and 5. And Lou will take a sip first. She'll be like, oh, this is so much. I need a sip today.
Well,
this,
you saw they showed that little thing where the ladies were stressing her out and she was upset. So they're leading you into, she's not going to do so well. And what are they going to do now that Dorinda's not there to confound things with, you know, her cocaine? I don't know. Allegedly.
Do we think that...
I don't have any money. I just have this one piece of house. Don't come after me, Dorinda. Allegedly.
Well, Sonia is going to be drunk by next episode because she's a, we already got two fingers up in the face, Sonia, which is, you know, like this.
That's drunk Sonia.
But
do we think that because Dorinda is not in the picture that Lou and Ramona finally became friends?
That was really phony to me. I didn't get it. I didn't understand that. That is an alliance.
Did you not watch Survivor? Yeah. This is what this is. Come on.
You're right.
Come on. Right. So who do we think is going to sell the other one out at the very end? Like, who's going to betray who in this alliance?
Ramona. She betrays everybody. Obviously.
She's going to tell Tom that Lou has some binoculars and Lou's watching him.
She's going to send a smoke signal to Tom.
She's going to have Tom and Missy making out on the terrace every night.
Oh,
so Lou can see that.
It cracked me up because Lou definitely, it was definitely an alliance. It was like, there was nothing real there.
Yeah.
And even they were both shocked about it. They're like, we don't know what's happening, but this is a new thing. We're trying for this.
Neighbors.
Yeah.
The new young girls look like they're going to be allies. So we should be allies too. And God, Sonia doesn't know anything.
That is part of why Sonia feels a little let down too. Sonia did not talk to them because these two formed an alliance and they left Sonia out.
Yeah.
Because Sonia yet again failed with her level in society. She doesn't have that business anymore. She's struggling. She's back in her condo. Sonia feels like a loser and they make her feel like a loser. I think they are the ones who make her feel that.
Yeah. Did you see that whole conversation where they were like, it wasn't about Sonia. Like, so Sonia goes, you know, I wasn't feeling that good. I just needed to be on my own. And they turned the conversation around to how her not feeling good was about her not letting them witness her not feeling good.
Correct.
Yes.
That's why Sonia went off into Nomad Land and she was walking the desert, right?
She knows.
That she knows how she will be treated by these bitches. That's why she avoided them, because they are not good for her mental health. She only comes back into Roni because she needs the paycheck. And the only way she can get that paycheck is if she can be drunk. So she doesn't get upset.
That's so sad. I mean, that is like 30 seconds away from Kim Richards.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, as much as I hate her, I have to say the only person, of course, minus the cheater brand incident where she did make her cry, the only person who has really looked out for Sonia Morgan is Bethany Frankel.
Is Bethany, yes. Bethany has actually looked out for Sonia in almost every fight. She makes sure, even though she's drunk, she's making sure she's safe, and she's giving her that space to be. Sonia's not going to have anybody there to look out for
her. She doesn't have Dorinda to do it now either.
No.
Yeah.
There's nobody there to take care of Sonia, and I'm worried about Sonia this episode or this season. But, you know, I rated the episode a solid 8 out of 10. I was like, this is great. I'm just happy that they're on. You're absolutely right. It's like a really well-edited show. It's fast. There's stuff happening the entire time. It's like, it's great entertainment, and I love it.
On their worst day, New York gives you more story than OC, Dallas,
Beverly Hills,
and for me, Atlanta combined.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Roni actually is put together like a sitcom. It gives me very sitcom vibes, the way they cut it, the way the ladies talk to each other. It's a very situational comedy. And that's why even that scene of Ramona and Sonia bickering about Harry Dubin, while like, you know, Ramona goes, oh, you know, she doesn't know me. And Sonia goes, and she's a liar. And like, they're all just laughing about it at the table. I loved it. I could watch that one clip like 5 times. It was so funny.
Well, it's a fun, you know, they kind of catch that, as much as I'm not a huge fan of the show anymore, a Sex in the City comedy vibe to them.
Yeah. That's definitely what they push.
There's always a story thread, like a Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of story thread, or a Seinfeld, where it's like multiple different stories and they sort of tie back together at the end of it. You could watch one episode of Roni and it would be like a sitcom. You watched it, you laughed your heart out.
Yeah.
You could watch these women sitting in a room drunk together for an hour and it'd be fascinating. If Beverly Hills tried it, I might jump out this window.
Yes.
So, God forbid me, but it's true. I mean,
what is the difference? Yeah. I keep thinking, like, why is that not working for Beverly Hills? And I think it's just the women
they're fake.
They're deeply fake.
Yeah, they're fake.
There's nothing. I mean, the New York women will throw each other under the bus, aka post in Page Six every 30 seconds and put each other's real business in the street. Mm-hmm. And they will not do that in Hollywood.
But also there's something smart about it.
They know how to craft an entertaining story. And so I think both groups of women are guiding the narrative. Mm-hmm. One is just more skilled than the other.
Yeah, and they're actually entertaining women. I think the other thing that we're missing in Beverly Hills is that in Beverly Hills, they're all actresses. So they're famous for acting like somebody who's not them. Yeah. But in New York, these women are just famous for being who they are. It worked because they're actually entertaining women. The cast of Beverly Hills are not interesting, entertaining women. Although I am turning around on Dorit. It's very confusing. I do like her. Okay.
I love Dorit.
She's a fascinating weirdo.
I think Dorit could fit into New York, actually.
She would. And then she would have like a thick New York accent. And I would fucking love that.
Yeah. I was one season in and said, okay, Dorit is for me. Dorit is for me. I'm here.
Yeah. You know, even though Dorit, because I think the thing with Dorit is also Dorit is not afraid to some degree make fun of herself.
Mm-hmm.
That's also why Potomac works, is that all the women are not afraid of making fun of themselves, but also being there for each other. And we talked about this actually last episode. There's some universal truths that exist in New York that all the women know. The same thing in Potomac. All the women know. you know, everybody knows that Ramona's a monster. Everybody knows that Sonia has all these other issues. Everybody knows that Luann is an uppity person. But for some reason, they also love each other despite it because they genuinely have a great time. This is the same thing we're now seeing in New Jersey. This is why this New Jersey cast works really, really well with each other. And this is why where Jackie kind of falls off on the end is that everybody in New Jersey is very aware of who they are. Everybody can joke about it and laugh about it, but still get together and talk about it. But of course, the winner for me in New Jersey is always going to be Dolores, because this is like Dolores's best season ever. Mm-hmm. It cracked me up that like the first like 30 seconds into the episode, she said, "I'm not driving in a fucking car with these jackoffs." I was like, I love you so much. You are so New Jersey and you're so perfect.
She's authentic. And she's like, look, I mean, this is what it is. It's a storyline that you want to hear or it's not, but I'm not trying to contrive mm-hmm. anything. I'm not going to pretend to break up with my husband. I'm not going to think about having a baby when clearly I'm not having any more kids. I'm not doing any of that for you. Yeah, I happen to think I'm pretty interesting as I am. And she is.
New Jersey, this episode, they went to a vineyard. Dolores told everybody to shut the fuck up. I loved it. And then we started to now get Louie, a lot of Louis talk. We show Teresa mm-hmm. going on a date with Louis months after the vineyard. By the way, there's snow on the ground. It's very fake. But I want to talk about Louis because there's very conflicting information out on the internet about this man. So there's a woman that recently did an article, and it's about narcissistic domestic abuse awareness. And it's women who are in relationships with narcissists and the abuse that you deal with in those types of relationships. It's very different than physical abuse. It's a different type of emotional abuse. And this woman talks about this really difficult relationship she was in. She was supposed to get married in early 2020. She ended the relationship with this guy. It was really scary. It was really sad. Allegedly, the man she is talking about is Teresa's new boyfriend. So Teresa Giudice has obviously
a type.
Exactly. It would make sense that somebody with narcissistic personality disorder would go ahead and go after the one woman on reality TV that everybody is waiting to shack up with another man. It's scary. Oh, I'm scared for Teresa, guys.
I don't make me like Teresa. Come on.
I don't like Teresa. I'm just saying it makes me worried for her.
I think Melania will save her. Melania will punch whoever comes for Teresa.
They all seem happy so far on vacation together, but we'll see with the big old blended family.
Apparently. Yeah. And I saw people on the internet talking about it and they were like, oh my God, Joe Gorga is going to kill him. I'm like, what are you talking about? Joe Gorga thinks that is how men should be. What?
Right.
Also, Joe Gorga, it took me a long time to really understand the Gorgas. And that was my fault. They got me. They made me believe that, look, Teresa's Teresa. She's kind of a little bit Ramona. Mm-hmm. And a little bit Sonia Morgan in there as well, like just kind of oblivious to certain things and kind of loopy and all of that. You think back to when we first got introduced to Joe Gorga and that fight and all of that kind of stuff. And to really understand now that all of that was angling to get on the show. It was lies and angling. I bought it. I thought, oh my God, why is she so mean to her brother? She's not really.
No, I think it was.
I think some of it was real. You're my father screaming into his dad's face at the Christmas. Listening.
Yeah,
I think that was a real moment.
A lot of money from that moment. I'm just saying. He's made a lot of money from that moment.
Your theory, I believe your theory has some very valid points. I agree with you. At this point now, we're like four seasons in and the Gorgas haven't had a real storyline since fighting with their sister. I am starting to believe that maybe all of it was to sort of stir this shit up, you know? Mm-hmm. The fact that we're now this many episodes in or this many seasons in and Joe Gorga is still trying to tell us that he's uncomfortable with his wife, quote unquote, having a career when her career is what makes him money. He's not making money off of those construction projects.
They're using Teresa as a storyline. Mm-hmm. I don't like it.
Yeah. They're still using it. You're right, though, because they are all the time. It's all their scenes are about is Teresa dating or not dating? And even when he goes over to Teresa's house, that's what he wants to talk about is the dating.
Like, the relationship.
Are you dating? Yeah. Are you in love? Yeah. Are you...
And she shut down you can't talk about Judice anymore. You can't talk about Juicy Joe anymore. And she was right. She's like, oh, it's, you know, kind of chill. He's not on here anymore. He's the father of my kids. let's let it go.
I know.
Yeah, but this is the other thing about Joe Gorga is that he is this kind of 1950s guy who's okay with his wife working, but as long as she's there, you know, at dinner time, she is the one cooking him meals and she's the one. He sort of reminds me a lot of South Asian men, even today, here. And that may be true for some Caribbean folks as well, is that they expect their woman to, you can have all the career you want. You can go do whatever. You can be the president of the country, but you need to be cooking me meals and being there for me and listening to me and being there for, give your time to me as well. If not, then I will start blaming you.
He's Ray.
Yes.
Yes.
He's Ray. That's right.
Yeah.
This is what I signed up for. This is what you signed up for.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of substitute parenting that happens or substitute relationships that happen in those situations because Joe Gorga probably also grew up in a house where the mom was catering to his every need. Mm-hmm. And so he is now expecting that relationship to be fulfilled by his wife. Similarly, in those types of traditional households, the mothers put all of their love that they're not getting from their husbands, they pour it into their sons. And then so when their sons get married and they have a wife who they treat differently or they show more affection to or affection in a different way, that's when those mothers end up hating their daughters-in-law. You know, guys, it's all messed up. Stay in your lane.
That's what Jennifer's mother. What Jennifer's mother is going through is that
exactly.
She put all of the love into her kids and now the kids have moved on. They have their own families and the husband is not giving. How does she feel that void that she's feeling of being needed, being wanted and being loved? How does she do that? She doesn't have anybody filling that void. And that's where all her resentment and anger comes from.
Yeah. I think, you know, when Jennifer's mom is like, I feel like you set me up and you embarrass me in front of all these women. The issue is that at its core, Jennifer's mom doesn't want to necessarily leave her husband. She just wants her husband to treat her differently than she's been treated. That's all it is. It's not actually, she doesn't need to sit in a room with a bunch of women that also hate their husbands. She wants to sit in a room with women who can tell her, here's how you can get your husband to treat you nicely. Or for her children to go and sit with their dad and say, I wish you would be as nice to mom as you are to us. That's all this woman wants. I feel for Jennifer because she is obviously trying to do the best that she can. This is Jennifer's best season, in my opinion. But it's really sad also to see that because you can also understand from like that the mom may have been a difficult person to communicate with. So you can't necessarily speak as openly to your parents as you'd like to. You know, it's very compelling TV. I really enjoy it. But it was really sad to see that.
Yeah, we called it last week when that mom thing happened, especially in our cultures. Mm-mm. You don't embarrass your mom. You don't embarrass your parents like that. You don't put our problems on front street. You don't talk about that, especially in front of people, in front of...
These are strangers.
These are strangers. Exactly. You don't do that.
And she would know better culturally. You know, these are folks who can't even say the word jail.
Yeah.
You know, they say go away.
These are,
but
these
all of a sudden you're progressive and you want to talk about come on.
Yeah. I know.
No, you don't do that. And you don't do that. You don't talk ill of your marriage or your parents in front of others. The embarrassment is worse than the actual issue that caused all of that. Right? Yeah. So they don't want to address the issue. They want to, they cannot go look beyond the embarrassment.
No. Well, Kim, thank you so much. I feel like this was probably the most, not that our other conversations haven't been intelligent, but I feel like this is one of the most like, I hope this is a very educational. I hope this is an episode that people listen to and feel more informed.
Yeah. I mean, you hope you open a window and people here get additional perspective, learn things. This is really exciting for me because since you started the podcast, I have been on every show in my head, right? So like it's on in the car. I'm adding in that witty dialogue with you all the time. You know, we're all friends. I mean, Noor, you and I already know each other. You and I are friends.
Yeah.
You just didn't know it yet. So it's really cool.
That's what Noor has been telling me, that you just don't know you have a friend. Yeah.
Listen, guys, listen. Everybody's, you know, on that track to being fully vaxxed. And we're going to go down to, you're in Maryland. We're going to go to that winery and the Potomac ladies went to.
Yep.
I want to see how hard it is to flip that table. I want to understand the velocity of the glass hitting Monique's face. I want to run some test there.
I call
do some reenactment.
I call dibs on being Robin.
I call dibs on being Ashley. Actually,
yeah. You want to go to the restroom?
The one that ran.
You want to go to the restroom? You want to go pee?
Yeah.
I call dibs on running away because you're not going to mess my weave up today. With all this wine and everything, I just got to blow out.
I will be either Robin or I can be the producer holding the door. I can do that. Notice, I wouldn't mind doing
none
that.
None of us wants to be Monique because we're actually getting a vaccine. Sorry. Well,
allegedly. No, it's not even alleged. Okay. Monique Samuels don't believe in science. Okay.
She has lavender oil. That will help her.
She's got lavender oils and that's what she believes is going to help her. But geez. Yeah. And none of us want to be Monique because Monique ran and the three of us, we're not running.
You're not running. You'll get I have a Monique in mind. I have a Monique.
There's a Monique.
I'm upset about the food and wine that got spilled. Okay.
There is a Monique that will willingly enact all of that and run and do all of that. I just know who it is.
I also believe on the topic of the food and wine being dropped, like, it is also extra upsetting because the Potomac ladies actually eat. So, like,
yes.
Yes. I mean, I was like mildly distracted, but wait, what happened? Like, all this stuff is on the ground.
Oh, all that cheese.
Y'all didn't even eat before you got into this fight. Come on.
Right.
Yeah. Kim, thank you for being on. So if you guys don't know, Kim and I became friends in a food Instagram world. And if you want to just see somebody and hear somebody and follow somebody who talks about food in a way that
and seasons of
some of us talk about Bravo. Yeah. Food with flavor, okay? Food with spices. So you can follow Kim.
I am Spiced by Kim. I changed it a couple times, but I am Spiced by Kim. I'm going to be full disclaimer. Spiced by Kim came because I just want to share my life now. And I don't just want it to be about food, although you're going to see that because I love cooking.
Yes.
I became a plant mom and I'm in love with that. So there's like... If you're ready for stream of consciousness, but mildly entertaining and never mean in your life, that's me.
Yeah.
It's me. I'm going to give you a little spice. I'm going to have a hot take. I'm going to say my opinion about everything. And then I'm going to share everything I love. And it's either your jam or it's not.
But yeah. We
get to pick.
You're getting politics, science, food, plants, everything. The
Is
royals.
That your baby behind you? Is that your baby?
That's one of them.
I went from 0 to 30 in a year.
I'm becoming I'm a botanist by training, but I am also have a horrible brown thumb. So I am trying to foster 3 tomato plants and hopefully they won't die before they have tomatoes.
We just trying to get grass in my house. Okay. That's it. Not like grass like weed, just like real grass.
So everything Noor said can happen within the same 3-minute window. So we could talk plant, politics, coffee, food, mm-hmm. back to politics, back to trash on Bravo. Hey, let's watch a cruise ship crash into
Just going to say, wait, Kim does this thing. Okay, we're there. It's so niche and it's so funny and I love it so much. You guys you won't understand it until you've experienced it. There are videos of YouTube of boats docking, but crashing into docks. Okay. Because you have to remember it's a boat. It's a very slow crash, but there's so much that happens leading up to these crashes. Kim will watch it on YouTube and record an Instagram story, play by play of what's happening. And you guys, it is. I didn't know how amazing it was until I watched it. And it's my favorite thing in the world.
You actually bring to fruition what happens in Below Deck every season where they say that they're going to crash, but they don't.
So but when you this actually happens crash on the boat. Below Deck, I'm going to be narrating it for you on Instagram stories when this episode, because there are no cruise ships that can do this right now. So I've got to give you something, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to happen. I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to probably relate it to my personal story of being in a boat that's crashed into the dock. It was the Disney Dream several years ago. I will share my pictures again and my video. It's very, very important to me that people know this, but like, all of it. I share it. I mention it.
It's so funny.
Oh, okay, you do mention Nora was right. You are my new best friend.
Yeah, you guys are going to be best friends. I can't wait. Well, thank you so much, Kim.
Gosh, but it's fun. Thank you, guys. Yeah. This is so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. And so we will talk to you guys about Summer House and Married to Medicine on Wednesday.
Bye.
Bye.